that's the sound of another sale on Shopify, in store. Shopify POS is everything you need to sell in person. From payments to inventory, Shopify unites your sales into one commerce platform. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/retail23. Shopify.com/retail23.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Welcome back to Roland Garros on day 7 of the 2023 French Open, where you find us once again on our lovely little corner of Philippe Chatrier Stadium. Chatrier Stadium, which incidentally right now is enjoying an unexpected men's doubles match. And that is because proceedings finished rather quickly over there for a number of different reasons, all of which will be touched upon on today's show. David, I've just clocked that you've got a tan.
Yeah. Who'd have thought it? It's a new thing for pasty white me. But I've managed to get out and about in the sunshine in between Suzanne Longlen sets of tennis that I've been enjoying today.
Yeah, a lot of our fun today has been had on Suzanne Longlen. Matt has revived his draw day outfit, which received such rave reviews. Similar compliments today, Matt?
No, actually. The people are used to it by now, and you know, it hasn't. Today hasn't lived up to draw day. I would say it's been a little bit of a flat day of tennis. To get everyone really excited for this podcast.
Keep listening, folks. It's going to get
so
good.
So far, we are only halfway through the day.
Yeah, look, this is part one. There'll be a part two later, which hopefully will open on a slightly more energetic note. But yeah, part one, it's been a bit of a disappointing day. There are highs and there are notable moments, all of which we'll cover to you with as much cover for you with as much pizzazz as we can possibly muster, which isn't looking great at this moment in time. But
after a retirement and a double bagel.
Yeah, you think you've had a flat day, Matt. Think of our friend Dave, who had tickets on Chatrier today.
I've seen our friend Dave, who had tickets on Chatrier, and he was very keen to say, but we're having a lovely time.
Yeah, he kept saying, we're having a lovely time through gritted teeth.
It's so
whilst
nice.
Also
here.
Saying, yeah.
Mm, wasn't great, was it? Yeah. It wasn't even a retirement. It was a walkover. Yeah, didn't even get any tennis in that match.
Right, we will get into all of that. Before we do, I want to tell you that this episode and all our episodes of the Tennis Podcast throughout Roland Garros is brought to you in association with On Location. On Three, everyone, the premium hospitality and experience provider. Thank you very much, David. On Location is the official tour operator for the BNP Paribas Open.
And they never have flat days.
Indian Wells in March. And we can tell you that their packages via Steve Fergal's International Tennis Tours. Was that a fanfare?
Well, you know, it's the On Location read.
We arranged for that. We did. They're now on sale. Da, 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 da,
da, da. Just had one of those.
If you would like to go to Indian Wells in style and experience what genuinely is one of the most spectacular settings in the sport to watch professional tennis, you'll be staying in a 4 or 5-star hotel or accommodation, great tickets to watch the tennis, access to a hospitality suite to relax in between matches. The thing to do is to go to toursfortennis.com/podcast, toursfortennis.com/podcast, and go to the Welcome to Paradise section. Now then, on to the reason that things have been a little bit disappointing so far today on Philippe Chatrier, and why perhaps the whole day has felt a little flat, and that is because we started it with the news that Elena Rybakina had withdrawn from the tournament ahead of her scheduled third-round match with Sara Cerebez-Tormo today, having suffered with sickness, with a virus. Nothing to do with injury, as we've been talking about all the way along. She's looked looked in brilliant form, such that we felt confident looking ahead to a quarterfinal with Ons Jabeur and a potential semi-final with Iga Świątek. And with all due respect to Saris Ribas-Tormo and everybody else in that section of the draw, we ain't going to get any of those things now, and we're gutted about it.
Yeah, I mean, Elena Rybakina could not have looked better on the court in the opening few days of this tournament. She looked as good as at Wimbledon and as at the Australian Open. She looked exactly where she needed to be. She looked like the player that was going to say to Iga Świątek, pick on someone your own size, who, you know, she's dished out four bagels. Rybakina looked like she was the player who was going to just take her into the waters that you want to see the top players in, where it's uncomfortable, where it's two players dishing it out and taking it. And unfortunately, she's really unwell, and it sounds like she's had a terrible day or two. I wasn't in the press conference because it was called at very short notice this morning, but you know, she's had a respiratory problem. She sounds like she's just really quite ill. Terrible shame.
Yeah, someone asked me whether she'd been eating the same escargot as Jessica Pegula, but it does sound different to that. And just gutted for her, gutted for us, because as you say, I was
mostly gutted for us.
I was looking forward to those potential matches in the second week. You know, I think one of the things about not having a top player be upset in the first few rounds is that it means you get to look forward to that second week. And we've lost Elena Rybakina. We've not even had the sort of, you know, the fun upset. She's just unfortunately had to withdraw from the tournament. It feels like such a shame that her exit has been in that manner. And, you know, I was so excited to see what she could do on this surface against Ons Jabeur, absolutely, but also against Iga Świątek. You know, they met in Rome, and that match was cut short when Iga Świątek had to retire midway through it. It just feels like we've been a little bit short-changed from this clay court season in terms of Rybakina versus those other top players. You know, I feel like we're due one of those matches, and we just haven't quite had it, and it's a shame.
Yeah, and the Rybakina-Świątek rivalry in particular, and whether Rybakina has Świątek's number on Świątek's favourite surface.
We don't know
the answer to
that,
do we?
And now another year to find out.
Yeah, it's really annoying. I mean, I'm sure this time next year we'll be anticipating that, like we are Alcaraz Djokovic this year, which is going to happen, folks. We're now only two rounds away.
It better.
But yeah, it is tremendously disappointing. It did feel like a real kick in the teeth this morning. But we've picked ourselves up. We've had lunch with Billie Jean King, and we've come in.
Sorry, what?
And forced ourselves to go to Suzanne Longlen to watch a 19-year-old against a 16-year-old. So, you know, we've managed to make something of the day, folks. And we did have a fantastic time out there. Coco Gauff beating Mira Andreeva 6-7, 6-1, 6-1. Now, David and I saw the two 6-1 sets, so we can comment on all of that. Matt is the only one of us that saw most of the 7-6 set, which Mira Andreeva won. It's interesting, just now in press, Coco Gauff said, even though I lost it at the end of that first set, I felt like I'd won it. Like, she wasn't down on herself. She felt like, I'm playing great tennis, I'm in control of this match, even though the scoreboard doesn't say that.
That's very interesting. That probably wasn't my read on the match when it was happening. You know, it was a absorbing first set. Like, I was really, really into it, and it was definitely the best set of the match. It was one of those where the player with the lead was really struggling. You know, they kept breaking each other, the momentum kept shifting, and I think when a match is like that, I think that's a sign that it's a little tight. You know, neither of them felt totally at ease, but Andreeva felt kind of more at ease, I would say, out of the two of them in that first set. She felt the more secure. But ultimately, I think what we saw today was probably why Coco Gauff has been so far ahead of her age category, I would say, generally, because in sets two and three, we saw Andreeva being a 16-year-old, being a bit diva, to use the words that she said in the press conference the other day. And it struck me that Coco Gauff has never really been like that. Her maturity has always been, I think, one of her biggest strengths. And she's always got the absolute most out of her game. Like, I don't necessarily think Coco Gauff has got the fifth or sixth, whatever she is ranked now, best game on the WTA Tour. We've talked about the floor with the forehand and the serve a little bit as well, but she's able to get so much out of it because of the way she competes and because of the, you know, her other strengths as well. And I feel like Mira Andreeva, in a way, feels like a more maybe complete player than Coco Gauff was a few years ago. But she doesn't yet have Gauff's incredible attitude on court and tenacity. And it's much more normal to be like Andreeva. Like, it was kind of reassuring in a way that she was as she was out there. And I'm talking about, you know, just sort of a little bit of petulance and swiping the ball away. There was an incident in the first set where I think she got very, very lucky not to be defaulted. She swiped the ball away in anger and it went straight into the crowd, and it was one of those where it happened before I'd had a time to really process it. It was so quick. But suddenly I thought, wow, that really could have hurt someone. She really could have been in trouble there. She impressed, called it stupid and recognised that she'd made a mistake. But she sort of kept doing it a little bit throughout the match, not in a dangerous way, but just swiping the ball away, just not having the best attitude out there. Totally understandable as a 16-year-old, but comparing the two, it made me think, wow, Coco Gauff has always been ahead of her years in that respect. And I think it was a really, really good performance from her in the end, and a really big win. I think that would have felt good.
When Gauff referenced that at the end of the first set, although she'd lost it, she felt like she kind of won it, she referenced the body language of Andreeva at that point,
right,
and the code violation. I think she thought, oh, if I stick around here, I've got her, because she recognised it. And she was asked at one point in the press conference, how aware are you of your opponent's body language generally? And she said, absolutely. If they're down on themselves, I'm going to use that. I see that as a positive. And Catherine actually asked her about...
I asked her about exactly the point that Matt just made, about the fact that she's never behaved like that on court, despite, you know, being a teenager throughout the entire time that we've known her. You know, seeing today how a normal teenager can very understandably behave on a tennis court, you know, you've never behaved like that. And she said, oh, well, I did break a racket in a French Open final here. I don't know if you missed that, but I did. And she said, I got fined for that. I got fined $7,000, and I decided after
it from about 3 years ago, I think she was referencing. Yeah, yeah, I mean, it was... she was very keen to sort of not have anybody fall on Andreeva, stick up for her, wasn't she?
Yeah, absolutely. She wanted to answer honestly about, yeah, I did notice that she was stomping around like, you know, like Catherine Whittaker age 16. And yeah, that must be a massive boost when you've just lost a set and that you can see that your opponent is the one having seemingly a bit of a petulant meltdown. Of course that must be a massive, massive boost. But she was very keen to say that in a way that didn't give any fuel to being hard on Andreeva. But you're right, that by doing that, she kind of was over-modest, I think, in terms of what Matt was just praising her for. Because, yeah, she's broken rackets and shown frustration, but I don't think she's ever shown sort of generalised negativity the way Andreeva did today. I mean, I find it totally understandable, and I'm quite sure she'll grow out of it. I mean, she literally did just turn 16, but it was amusingly bad body language, wasn't it? It was making us chuckle a lot.
Yeah, I mean, as a parent, I'm sort of fairly familiar with some of the body language that was going on there, and it's endearing, really. And also, I can't help thinking it fed into her poor shot selection and her tactics, which really made no sense.
It was a naive. I'm interested in whether this was the case in set one, Matt, because in set two and three, it seemed incredibly naive tactically from Andreeva. She wasn't targeting the Goff forehand at all. And I know the Goff forehand has been pretty okay, decent even this tournament, but it's still the wing to target. I mean, she allowed Goff to just put on a backhand exhibition, didn't she? Which we all enjoyed, but led to 6-1, 6-1 in the second and third sets.
Yeah, and there definitely was a shift. I think she played much smarter tactically in the first set. I think she noticed that Goff couldn't really hurt her with the forehand quite so much. She was doing quite a lot of moon balls, quite a lot of loopy shots just to reset rallies. And I think, exactly as you said, this attitude just ended up sort of taking her away from that, and she started being a bit more impatient and going for shots that weren't on quite so much. And also I think Andreeva prefers her own backhand to forehand, so I don't think she was that comfortable, even if it necessarily was the right play. I don't think she necessarily wanted a lot of forehand to forehand rallies with Goff, because her backhand is better than her own forehand. So she maybe thought, okay, I'll take Goff on at the backhand, but that was the wrong play. She had it definitely more correct in the first set. And yeah, I mean, Goff, just going back to that point in terms of Goff, how she's always been on court, her demeanour, I've definitely seen Goff get down on court, but it's always felt sort of down on herself, or maybe like a slightly overly harsh self-assessment of how she's playing. It's never felt petulant. It's never felt just sort of, oh, it's all going wrong, the world's against me sort of thing. And that was more the vibe from Andreeva today. It was a different energy to the negative energy that the Goff might have shown in the past.
It's Anna Karolina Schmiedlova next for Coco Goff, who was a straight sets winner today over Kayla Day, 6-1, 6-3. While we were watching Goff and Andreeva, Świątek was not giving us a chance to catch any of her match, because she won love and love over Wang Zhenyu on Châtrier today. Iga's bakery is back open, and she would wince at me saying that, because she was asked a question about the bakery, you know, the ongoing gag of Iga dishing out bagels and breadsticks left, right and centre, and she did not enjoy it, did she? I mean, she's no. sort of rejected that joke in the past, and it was a very firm rejection of it today.
Yeah, because I think she sees herself as a professional, she sees herself as a good sports person, and she doesn't want her opponents to feel laughed at, disrespected. And I mean, look, I honestly, when I walked into the press conference, it did occur to me to ask her a question as to whether she ever feels remotely awkward about beating a player 6-love, 6-love, which she's done, I think, a few times now. I mean, she's won 4 out of her 6 sets this week, 6-love. Like, 2 of them were close, 6-4, 6-4, but that's an extraordinary ratio of 6-love sets. And I ended up not asking that question because I thought, it doesn't feel quite fair, really, in this, certainly in this environment, because what she's supposed to say, if she says, no, I don't feel at all awkward about it, and that's exactly what I do, it makes her sound heartless. And if she does, then it feels a bit like false modesty. And I feel her job is to win 6-love, 6-love. It's every player's job to win like that. And she's really efficient at it, really good at it, and good for her, you know? And look, the bakery thing, it is fun and games. We tweet about it sometimes, and I enjoy the reference. But I get why she wouldn't want to engage with that idea. What was much more interesting from her press comments was hearing her analyse the route she's been on in answer to your question regarding how she felt after the Australian Open and how she'd been playing at that time not to lose. And Catherine put that to her and wanted to know what had changed and how that had changed. And she gave a really fascinating insight to what it's like being, as I guess, well known as she is, being number one for the first time, coming into a season, having an off season where she sort of went out into the world a little bit and exposed herself to people, which you want to be able to do. But I think she felt probably a bit watched a bit... well, she mentioned pressure several times, and she definitely started going through thought processes that she just wouldn't if she's in the best frame of mind and if she's maybe in her bubble. She clearly needs to be in that environment where there aren't loads and loads of voices coming up to her telling her what's going on the internet, and how people are talking about her. And I think that was a really interesting insight, and it shows the challenges of being a world number one, but also how she's managed to cope with it.
Yeah, and how it strikes me that what she's describing in terms of her coping mechanisms are existing totally in a bubble that does not resemble reality at all. What she described there was kind of re-immersing herself in the world at the end of her most successful season on tour and freaking out a bit about it. And she even said, I'm going to have to look at my off-season this year and see if I don't do something a bit differently, because I don't want that to happen again. And look, she's a professional tennis player. Her job is to be as good at that as possible, and she's doing that better than anyone else in the world. So I'm not criticising, but it is a very particular way of doing things, you know, in contrast to Coco Gauff, who is a less successful tennis player, but she's very much existing in this world, isn't she, and processing things and feeling her feelings. I feel like Świątek is blocking everything out in a tunnel-visioned way, and it is working, it's successful. I have question marks about the sustainability and the long-term healthiness of that from a psychological perspective, but only time will tell.
Yeah, it is understandable, and I think for Coco Gauff, existing in the United States, such a bigger environment, you can be a little more anonymous. You can, she's got a big family around her, and that sort of thing. So maybe it's a little easier than perhaps what is more like a goldfish bowl, because Świątek is so popular in Poland and so loved, and people want to let her know, and I get that, but it's a lot.
It's personality types as well, yeah. Isn't it? I mean, and again, it's extremely early days, but Carlos Alcaraz doesn't seem to be burdened by any of that at all, does he? You know, as we described, comfortable, there's no room he's not comfortable in, but Świątek is just a different personality type, and that's fine. She's managing it in a way that, as I say, working for her right now. I worry a bit about the medium to long term with that approach. Would you like news on who Iga Świątek plays in round four?
Yes, please.
It's not Bianca Andreescu.
Oh. Can I blame our mate Dave for this?
Yeah, please, because do. Blame something.
Because, as we've discussed, he had Chatre tickets today and the matches were not very good or very long, and we sent him over to Simone Mathieu to go and watch Bianca Andreescu versus Alexia Sorenko. We thought that'll be a fun time. Andreescu's always a fun time. Not today.
Honestly, our plan was record this pod and then head to, because we're halfway to Simone Mathieu in our recording position here with the band accompanying us. That was unplanned but delightful. Our plan was then to bob off to Simone Mathieu and catch the remaining thrilling chapters of the match. Well, there was about one chapter of the match by the looks of things, and it was Andreescu being pommeled by Alexia Sorenko. 6-1, 6-1. So that's a thing that happened.
Yeah. Can't tell you too much about the match because we've been talking on here. But I mean, well, from the very start, you just saw this scoreline ebbing away and thought maybe something similar happened to what happened with Azarenka when she mounted a fight back from 6-2, 3-1 down. But, yeah, I mean, Sorenka's a very good player. She's having a decent year, but still, that doesn't sound good on paper, does it?
If you can does sound not good on paper. Sound good on paper, not at all. Still to play today on Jabeur, so we'll bring you news of how she fares later on. Sara Sorribes-Tormo, of course, got through by virtue of Rybakina's walkover. Will play Beatriz Haddad Maia in round four, and that was probably the match of the day, Haddad Maia's against Alexandrova.
And a big moment for Haddad Maia, because she's had a lot of good results on the tour over the last year or so, but
tell me about it.
As David will know, has had a real block at the slams, and this is now a breakthrough. And I ran into Natalie Gedra of Brazilian TV, who we mentioned a few days ago on the podcast, and she had just interviewed Haddad Maia after this match and just said how pleased Haddad Maia was finally to have overcome this hurdle of never reaching the second week of a slam, because it had been a mental block, and she got really, really tight in the closing stages today trying to serve it out. I think she had to save a match point as well, but to just come through that against Alexandrova is a big, big moment. And as we've discussed, that section of the draw has opened up because of Rybakina going out. So it's now a massive opportunity for Haddad Maia, not only to reach the second week of a slam as she's done, but actually push on and, you know, maybe go really, really deep here.
Great result for her. I'm pleased for her. Some more bummer news. we ready for it?
Yes, although I do feel bad, because I started this podcast by saying it's been a bit of a dud of a day, and then you casually dropped in that we'd had lunch with Billie Jean King, and that sounds like I've had a bad day, which has included lunch with Billie Jean King. I was talking strictly about the tennis, in case that wasn't clear to anyone.
Sure, Matt. Point made. The bummer I was referring to is the defeat of Taylor Fritz in four sets to Francisco Cerúndolo. 3-6, 6-3, 6-4, 7-5 for Cerúndolo, who's put together a fantastic clay court season. It has to be said. He deserves a lot of credit, and he's just difficult to beat, Cerúndolo, isn't he? You need to get out there and you need to beat him. There's plenty of levels with plenty of players with a top level that's higher than his, but you need to hit them. And didn't see all of this match. Saw quite a lot of the first set, actually, that Taylor Fritz won, but, you know, I don't think he was able to hit that top level enough of the time, despite the perfect reception he received onto court. What better boost could there be to your hopes of success than being booed onto the Suzanne Longlen court
2 days after being shushed by the player, and the player coming out with his sort of V sign very coolly in response to it? I mean, it was fantastic. And look, if I would understand it if people were thinking, well, what about poor old Cerúndolo, as Catherine's so generously talked about how well he's played, and obviously Cerenko, who's had a fantastic winners into the second week. In Fritz's case, I just wanted to see more shushing and more engagement with the crowd. So the longer he stayed in the tournament, the more chance of that happening. And with Andreescu, she's just so much fun to watch. And you know how good she can be. Grand Slam champion. Fact is, those are disappointing defeats for both of those two players, even as well as they will no doubt have played.
Yeah, it just feels like some fun has gone today.
Right, yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it. I don't know whether I would expect Taylor Fritz to beat Cerúndolo on clay over five sets. I mean, probably not, to be honest. Like, that to me was kind of a coin flip match, really. It does continue this trend of Taylor Fritz not having the best slam results. I think it's first round at the US Open last year, second round in Australia, now third round here. So maybe he's getting closer, or maybe he keeps losing in the first week. And he's got, I think he's ambitious, isn't he? I think
he wants to reach a final this year.
He will expect a lot more from himself than that. I don't know about clay.
Than Jannik Sinner expects from himself, anyway.
Right, yeah, he just wants to reach Turin. But I guess Fritz probably will be targeting the grass and the US Open. They feel like the slams where he could reach a final if he plays really, really well. I wouldn't be predicting it at this stage. It feels like he's got to get a lot better in these slams. But that's a tough match against Cerúndolo, who has racked up so many wins on clay, big good wins as well. And yeah, he's a dangerous opponent for Runa in the next round, I would say.
Yeah, Runa today, having had a walkover in his previous round, was supposed to play Gael Monfils, was efficient. 6-4, 6-1, 6-3 for him on what ended up being the first match of the day in Chatry against Gennaro Olivieri. We asked Dave for a review of this match, our friend Dave, who we should probably pay some sort of consultancy fee for today's pod.
He'll
and he said it was the first time he'd watched Runa play and he was very, very impressed by him. You know, as you'd be expect, as you'd expect from a victory that comfortable. But, you know, see our preview podcast about Runa. We thought he needed to be efficient in these early rounds. I know he dropped a set to Christopher Eubanks, which doesn't scream efficiency, but since then he has knuckled down and he's keeping, I think, some gas in the tank, which he, as you say, Matt, might need in the next round.
Yeah, well, he had a very a kind walkover in the second round. I feel like he's into week two and I've barely noticed, you know, and that, as you said, exactly what he needed. He did feel, with a tough draw, I think he was susceptible to getting dragged into long matches that would then cost him in the second week. But yeah, he should have enough in the tank. And something I learned today about Holger Rune, and I think you will love this, Catherine, in terms of keeping energy in the tank, he says he likes to sleep for 9 to 13 hours per day. Now, he wasn't saying he has 13 hours sleeps, but he says that he will sleep and he will take advantage of naps. And he says, when I'm awake, I'm very awake. But if I'd rather be asleep than just sort of resting, because he thinks sleep is the best recovery.
I mean scientifically, right. It is.
Indeed.
Yeah. I met someone the other day who sleeps for 10 hours, an adult human, who sleeps for 10 hours every single night. Which, look, is obviously the dream, but there's stuff to do.
That's what I always talk about, isn't it?
How do you get
anything
done?
I've got time for this sleep nonsense. There's so much stuff to be done.
We also have Casper Ruud and Nicholas Jarry having set up a fourth round meeting today. Matt has been high on Nicholas Jarry all tournament. Tell us why, Matt. Why did you see this run coming? And does he have a chance against Casper Ruud?
Well, he's won two titles on clay this year. And he came into the tournament having just won one of those in Geneva, where he beat a host of great players. You know, Zverev, Ruud. And it sometimes feels foolish to pick the guy who's just won a title to then go on and replicate that at the Slam. How many times have we seen the opposite happen? But he's a very, very good clay court player. And I felt like he was just in a section of the draw where it could open up. And I think Tommy Paul was his first seed. And Paul, in my mind, should be good on clay. He grew up on the surface, even though it was in America. He sort of honed his game on clay and therefore has quite a complete game. But Paul has had some horrible results on clay over the last few weeks and months. And just thought Jarry would take advantage of that, and he did. He beat Marcus Giron today in four sets, and he's just got a massive serve, a big heavy forehand, and I think he's loving these hot, fast conditions. I think the titles that he's won this year have been at a bit more altitude. I mean, in Chile earlier in the year, and Geneva is not at sea level like we are here, so I think it will be different when he plays Casper Ruud in a couple of days' time. I think the conditions here will suit Ruud a bit more than they did in Geneva, but he's tough, Nicholas Jarry, and having come this far, I would really like him to get to the quarterfinals, because then I get points. Otherwise, he might as well have gone out in the first round.
Matt's pushing of the Nicholas Jarry hype train led you, David, to go to his press conference earlier. We had a message in the WhatsApp group saying, I've just had a lovely chat with Nicholas Jarry.
Yes, I was one of two English-speaking journalists in his press conference. And I thought, I feel like I know so little about this guy. I, I just want to get a feel for what he's like. And I mean, for a start, he's 6'6". He is a strapping lad. You know, you said he's had a really good clay court season. Doesn't really automatically make me think of somebody of that height, but he's clearly very capable on the surface, and he's very serious. That's how he comes across. Very considered. And he answers questions at quite some length, gives them a lot of thought. And I think one of the main things I wanted to find out is how he got from where he was to where he is. The fact that he's now into a second week of a Grand Slam. And he said, you know, I've been trying to do this for years. I've been trying to get to this, to make this step. And I was curious as to what's changed. And he said, it's mental. It's not my game. My game is the same. It's all mental. And I asked him, well, what's changed and what did you do? And he said, well, I've worked a lot with a psychologist to just not get obsessed, to just not throw my racket all the time and be emotional on the court, because I realized that, you know, I was wasting all this energy and I was beating myself, I suppose, is what he was getting at. And now he says, it doesn't matter what happens on the court now, I stay calm. And even if it's not going my way, I stay calm. I try, that's what I'm trying to do. And it's working. I mean, you know, he played and beat Casper Ruud recently in Geneva, and it was put to him that, you know, you knocked him off, that Ruud had said he'd knocked him off the court. That's what Ruud said in his press conference earlier today. And I must admit, I didn't watch the match myself, but that's quite a statement from somebody of Casper Ruud's clay court pedigree. And he just said, I've got to be able to play that game and not allow him to play his game. If he plays his game and he gets it on his forehand, I'm going to be in trouble. So it sounds like it's going to be first strike tennis stuff.
It's like Nicholas Jarry relived.
I really enjoyed meeting him.
or lived for David.
Yeah.
There was nothing to redo.
Yeah, I do think this is the first time we've gone big on Nicholas Jarry on this show, but probably not the last, if Matt's hype is anything
well,
to
I'm
go by.
I'm now looking forward to really watching a match of his against Ruud, you know, and seeing all what he said in action.
That is it in terms of results that we had in so far today. As I say, Matt and I will be back later. David might join us, depending on what his status is, because David is down to commentate on tonight's Chatrier night session match between Francis Tiafoe and Alexander Zverev. So just in case we don't have you later, David, let's cover off tomorrow's order of play now while we have a full complement of tennis podcasters, because we start on Chatrier with Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova, who's having a run here just out of nowhere. She lost love and love in Rome, didn't she? To Iga Świątek, so it happens. I mean, it quite literally happened today, but wow. I mean, just
great
finding
story.
Form out of nothing.
Yeah, another good name to have in the draw. I think we mentioned that yesterday in terms of players like Svitolina and Kasatkina and Mukova, you know, having Pavlyuchenkova, former finalist here. She gave a really interesting press conference earlier on in the tournament when she was talking about, you know, the injuries that she's had and the recovery she's had to make, and how she was told that she wasn't even allowed to go on the court and sit down on a chair and hit balls because her doctor knew that as soon as she started doing that, she'd want to get up and start playing, and that wouldn't be right for her recovery. So she literally had to just take proper time off, not doing anything. And she said, you know, she was kind of out of shape, and she's had to work so hard to get back into shape. And here she is thriving again at Roland Garros. I think she might have won like 10 of her last 11 matches at this tournament, you know, the one loss being the final. She understands how to play here, I think, and it's an underrated story, I think, so far that she's, as you said, so quickly seems to have rediscovered form from just a few weeks ago. But hey, good players can lose love and love for Iga Świątek.
Yeah, Eliza Mertens is first up for her on the Chatrier court tomorrow. Then it is Novak Djokovic against JP Verias. 2 days ago, I found out what the JP stood for, so I'm fully versed on on Varias, should there be a massive upset tomorrow.
And what is it?
Juan Pablo.
Okay, good to know. Thank you.
Then it is Carlos Alcaraz against Lorenzo Musetti, the final day session match, which means we have women in the night session. Sloane Stephens against Aryna Sabalenka, which we're pleased about, but we don't want to sort of, you know, heap praise on anyone for putting one women's match in the night session. Well, and it also gives us, it gives us a certain amount of anxiety, doesn't
yeah,
it?
I mean, about time for a start, and let's not make that the last one. But you're right, that I'm already getting inundated by the people saying, right, you got what you want, they better be good, you know? And it's like, well, why are we saying that? Why do these two women now have to produce the greatest match of all time to justify their position as the night session match at the French Open? It is another match. They should be all getting matches, and they should have, if you can't let them play the same number of sets as the men, then there should be another match scheduled after them to give whatever value ticket payers expect to get in terms of sheer number of sets, and to insure against an emphatic display by one player who shouldn't be criticised and penalised because she happens to be bloody brilliant like Iga Świątek. She should be allowed to win 6-love, 6-love and be praised for it without people saying, I want my money back, and why are these women allowed to play? You know, schedule things so that that doesn't happen.
Text just in from Dave, by the way, who says, just realised we saw three matches and in seven sets the winners lost 10 games in total. But he's added it up.
He's had a lovely day.
No, we're having a great time.
More time in the bar.
Longlen is Khachanov against Sonego, and then Mukova against Avanesyan. And then Svitolina Kazatkina third on there, followed by Ofner Tsitsipas. We're at that stage of the tournament where suddenly there's only two courts with singles matches on, and it's all just happening too quickly. You go from, oh my God, I haven't got enough eyeballs or enough attention span, to where are all the matches within the space of about 12 hours, and it's whiplash.
Why can I only watch Sebastian Ofner?
Yeah, there will be a portion of tomorrow, Matt, where if you want to watch singles, it will probably involve Sebastian Ofner. I would deal with that now.
It'll be my Nicholas Jarry moment where I get to discover another new player.
Now, we will be back with part two again for you in a matter of mere moments for us in a few hours' time. Just before I let you go, David, seeing as we have a couple of minutes, well, I'm telling you we have a couple of minutes, we're kind of at the halfway stage now, aren't we? Would anybody, if given the opportunity at no cost, change their pre-tournament predictions?
To win the title?
Yeah.
I certainly wouldn't on the women's side. I said Iga Świątek at the outset, I still feel that. I am fairly on the fence about Alcaraz and Djokovic. I do think that just could go either way. And I don't feel massively strongly either way, but I would still go Alcaraz.
And you still feel confident Djokovic-Alcaraz is happening?
Yeah, I am. I mean, I do think Tsitsipas is playing well enough to maybe cause Alcaraz some problems. He's a good enough clay courter, and it will depend which Alcaraz turns up, because if he's at his absolute peak, even best Tsitsipas won't live with it, is my prediction. So I do think we'll end up with Djokovic Alcaraz. I do think so. And then I would just about go Alcaraz. But, Djokovic is so bloody good at this.
From those that are left, I mean, everybody seems pretty sure about sort of three, you know, one name in the women's in terms of who's reaching the final from the top half, and two names in the men, either Djokovic or Alcaraz. From the open halves of the two draws, who do we see reaching the final at this stage?
I'm sticking with Runa.
Yeah, I had Runa. I had Sabalenka, which she's still in, so I will stick with that. I do think the night session scheduling there might help Stevens. Generally a bit slower. I think Sabalenka in hot, quick day conditions might have fancied that, but I think that's a really tough match against Stevens at night. But if she can get through that, I would feel pretty confident about Sabalenka. And yeah, the men's, I had Rune, so I'll stick with that. And honestly, I maybe feel more confident given who's gone out. You know, I thought he might have to beat Medvedev or Sinner, whereas I think Rune versus the winner of Jarry Rude. I don't know. Maybe the finalists could come from that match. So I've
sort of predicted
the final.
Did you hear that, David?
Sort of predicted everybody.
Well, he also sort of predicted. Is Nicholas Jarry in your mix?
No.
Is he in your final mix? Would you be surprised?
Yes,
Nicholas Jarry reached the final.
I think I would still be surprised, but don't rule it out. Is all I'm saying.
Is Nicholas Jarry going to be in the title to this podcast? The Nicholas Jarry pod?
As Mira Andreeva said wisely at 16 years old today, the future is the future, so I don't know what's going to happen. That is going to be my answer now to any time you say, what's your prediction? The future is the future. I cannot say what's going to happen.
And it applies to part two of the pod. We'll be back in a moment.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
Well, it's about 5 hours later. It's 12:30 and we're back. Myself and Matt, we're one man down. David is still in the commentary booth, having just wrapped up coverage on BBC Radio of Alexander Zverev's four-set victory over Francis Tiafoe. And frankly, Matt, we shouldn't be here recording this yet, because Francis Tiafoe really should have taken that into a fifth set. Who knows what would have happened in the fifth? But he should have taken it into a fifth, shouldn't he?
So many chances. Just that he failed to convert, really. Zverev is playing a lot better than I think I had realised. Certainly he's improved as this year has gone on, as he's made his comeback. He looks physically a lot stronger than he did at the start of the season, and his forehand is holding up pretty well. His backhand is still extremely dangerous. He's playing like a top player again. But yeah, Tiafoe had his chances, and it just feels like he's still in that category of being a fun showtime player who is getting better at big moments and big matches, and I do trust him more than I used to, but
there's still something missing that is stopping him, I think, taking him to that absolute next level and making him like a consistent top 10 player who wins these sorts of matches and goes really deep in slams. I mean, he's done it once at the US Open, but yeah, a fun match, but Tiafoe, I think, will have regrets.
Wimbledon in the US Open, the next two slams, interesting for Tiafoe, potentially defining for him at this sort of pivot point in his career, I think. Grass, I think, suits him, but maybe Wimbledon doesn't, which is an interesting one.
The atmosphere of it all. And,
yeah.
Yeah, he wants it loud.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And Wimbledon want everything quiet and polite, don't they?
I mean, in his post-match interviews, Zverev made quite a good analysis, I felt, there, that he's sort of trying to make the match, he didn't use these words, but kind of as dull as possible when he plays Tiafoe, whereas Tiafoe's trying to make it as entertaining and as fun as possible. And yeah, the US Open suits him for sure. And I remember last year when he said, I'm going to come back and win this thing.
Yeah, we'll hold you to that, Francis. Verbal contract. So we're watching Alexander Zverev be interviewed on Prime Video. If he hadn't won that match, he would have dropped outside the world's top 50. He now faces, in the fourth round, Grigor Dimitrov. You heard me, Grigor Dimitrov. In the single-handed backhand off, he was by far the winner. Three straight sets for him over the conqueror of Jannik Sinner, Daniel Altmaier, who was unable to back up the win. And it was
the remains of Daniel Altmaier.
I think so, yeah. Given how one-sided that score was for Grigor Dimitrov. Look, I know we really need David here for this discussion, because I'm a bit over being sucked in by Grigor Dimitrov and rumours of this being a revived or new Grigor Dimitrov. But I hope it's true. I hope that is the case. I think we'll really find out when he faces Zverev. He doesn't have a good head-to-head against Zverev.
No, you looked it up 3-1, isn't it, in Zverev's favour. And Dimitrov's lone victory came almost 10 years ago. I mean, it's staggering to think that Zverev and Dimitrov could have played that long ago, but it was 2014 when Dimitrov did get his win. Yeah, I mean, he's in his Lacoste kit. He seems to be doing well in it.
He's in his French era.
Right. And he seems to be playing with the swagger and the confidence of someone who's believed in him. I don't know. And I don't know whether I'm reading too much into that, but I don't know. I can imagine that.
You're referring to David, right?
David and René Lacoste. I can just sort of imagine a new fit, a new look, just might come.
Oh, you genuinely think this is a Lacoste? But are you making a play for some Lacoste here, Matt?
Because always.
I don't know if you remember, but Wilson are your sponsor.
Oh, yeah. That's true. Sorry, Wilson.
Sorry, Wilson, but Matt will accept free kit from anyone that's offering.
Yeah, literally. I don't know. I just feel like there's a confidence to Grigor Dimitrov. I think he's put in a lot of work this year with Jamie Delgado, and there's just this sort of slightly new man feel to him. You know, as you said, I think we're all a bit wary of saying that because we've definitely been here before with Grigor Dimitrov. But honestly, I think you could say the same for literally anyone in that bottom half of the draw. They're all thrilled to be there because they've all got it. Honestly, it feels like they've all got a chance.
It's
of,
the place
of going
to be.
Deep.
That is where the party's at,
right,
isn't it? It was the top half of the women's draw today. Ons Jabeur is still in it. Just she was a set down to Olga Danilovic of Serbia, 22 years old. She's been a much touted talent, I think, for a while since it emerged that Novak Djokovic was her mentor as a kid, and he certainly sort of promoted her talent over the years, and she really is a talent. There are some weak spots in her game, but the strengths are extremely strong. And she's a fierce competitor. She made a big old play for the intensity list while Matt and I were watching her out on Longlen today. And yeah, she was a set down in that second set. She retrieved the break. She made it nip and tuck. But eventually it was some inspiration from Ons Jabeur, particularly on the forehand side, that sealed her that second set. And then she grew stronger in the third, did Jabeur, which looked so improbable towards the end of that second set because she looked like she was running on fumes.
Yeah, and an explanation for that in her press conference, the first question, I think, came from the moderator, as it often does, and sort of talk about the match and how you were feeling. And she said, well, let's just say that being a woman is hard sometimes and a man won't know what I was experiencing today. And, you know, just she elaborated on it a bit later in the press conference and said, yeah, that time of the month. And she looked exhausted. Mm. I was, you know, even when she had that inspirational surge on the forehand to win the second set, I wondered how sustainable it would be because she looked, yeah, physically kind of spent. So incredibly impressive that she then did manage to keep it going in the third set. And it was a very fun atmosphere on Longlen. It was by no means full. It was late in the day. There'd been a lot of tennis, but a decent crowd had stuck around. And those who had stuck around were very prepared to make a lot of noise. And there was this incredible scene to our left of the Ons Jabeur player box, and directly behind, literally the row behind, the sort of Olga Danilovic Serbian fan club, and then right behind them some more Tunisian fans. They were sort of egging each other on to just make as much noise as possible. It was pretty feverish out there, especially in the second set when it was nip and tuck between the two players. But yeah, I think that's a fantastic win for Ons Jabeur in the circumstances against a player, as you said, in Olga Danilovic, who was playing really, really well and full of confidence after qualifying as well and just surging through the draw.
Yeah, and I'm so, so pleased Ons has said that, and hopefully players saying that can become more and more normalised as time goes on. So Ons Jabeur through to face Bernarda Pera, which I know sounds like a good draw on paper, but she's tricky.
Mm, I think Pam Shriver certified her tricky earlier this week when
lefty,
when Donna Vekic lost to Pera. Lefty, not dissimilar to Danilovic, I would say. Maybe hits a bit flatter.
Yeah, sort of stiff, but a good ball striker. Mm. Strong, but yeah, the draw is better for Jabeur being in it, especially given the blows that it suffered today in terms of the fun that we covered in the top half of the
exactly.
draw.
We needed Jabeur.
Yeah, absolutely. And there were some moments of absolutely gorgeous inspiration from her that kept her in that match, quite frankly, because Danilovic had her, it felt like, for some moments there. It was such a contest.
Although we should have known, because Reggie picked Danilovic.
Bless him. There is now a movement for Reggie to pick Djokovic or Alcaraz or Swiatek just to test the Reggie curse.
Yeah.
Well and truly. Or, to pick against one of those three.
Yeah.
And to see... Sorry, no, to pick one of those three
to
win.
Yeah, to see whether he can curse Novak Djokovic out of the tournament
exactly.
or Carlos Alcaraz or Iga Swiatek.
Yeah, what is stronger, 22 Grand Slams and counting or the curse of Reggie? Everybody wants to know. Sign up to the newsletter to find out what Reggie does next. We've already been through tomorrow's schedule, haven't we? We've done that with David. We've done our sort of midway taking stock of the tournament. I think all there's left to do is to remind you that we have lovely Phoebe, our tournament mascot. We have our mascots, Maisie, Xenia, and Darwin. I stole Nicholas Jarry from Matt today, so myself and Xenia didn't embarrass ourselves, but also can't really glory too much in the win because we stole it from Matt.
And then I was all flustered. I didn't know what to do. I've been picking Nicholas Jarry at every available opportunity. And of course, I got mine wrong.
Oh, David did too, if that makes you feel any better. Billie Jean is sponsored by Billie Jean King. Head to our Instagram for some, in the words of Matt, in a crowded field, possibly the cutest Billie Jean video he had ever seen.
I've watched it so many times.
The video is on our Instagram. We have our executive producers and top folks, Jamie, Hannah, Andrew, and we don't have shout-outs because we don't think it would be right.
That's the sound of another sale on Shopify, in store. Shopify POS is everything you need to sell in person. From payments to inventory, Shopify unites your sales into one commerce platform. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/retail23. Shopify.com/retail23.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
To do shout-outs without David. I mean, what if somebody comes up whose name
sparks an anecdote from the 90s?
Exactly.
We'll never know what we would have missed. So.
Exactly. We wouldn't want anyone that has paid good money for a shout-out to feel shortchanged by the lack of David Law. So shout-outs will be back tomorrow. We will be back tomorrow and we'll speak to you then.